Welcome to Books in the Biz, the show where real-world business meets real-world results. Hosted by business strategist Dan Paulson and veteran CFO Richard Beltry, this podcast breaks down the stories, trends, and financial insights shaping today's companies. Dan brings decades of experience helping leaders simplify operations, build strong cultures, and scale with confidence. Rich adds his deep financial expertise from guiding organizations across healthcare, construction, logistics, and professional services. Together, they dig into what's really happening behind the numbers and what it means for owners, executives, and anyone trying to grow a stronger, smarter business. This is practical conversation, real talk, and tools you can use right now. Welcome to Books in the Biz.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Books in the Business. I am here with my good friend, Kelly Murphy. Kelly, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic, Dan. How about you?
I am doing wonderful in this smoky, smoggy, hot day here as we're recording this. All the wildfire smoke's moving through. I'm sure you're looking out the window going, I can't see much anymore.
True. And how many excuses can I come up with to stay inside?
You don't need many today, that's for sure. They're actually recommending you do so. So yeah. I will as well. Rich will not be joining us today. Apparently, he has like work or something to do. So he's tied up with something. So it's just you and I. But we have some fun discussions that we're talking about because I think as we kind of went through our list before we started this podcast, there's a lot of alignment with what you're doing and what I'm doing that I think there's going to be some good conversation going back and forth.
Wonderful. Let's get to it.
So let's kind of start off with the premise here. Businesses start off small, then they grow, they add people. People tend to add more complexity and for some owners creates more problems and then they get frustrated and business kind of goes haywire and lots of mistakes are made. Our conversation today is to help hopefully show some patterns or some paths that companies can take to prevent those issues from popping up, maybe manage their people better, lead better. And that comes from both an operational perspective and an HR perspective. So I'm going to let you kick it off with some of the things that you have on your list, because I'll just kind of jump in where I see things from an operational perspective and let me know your thoughts. So why do businesses, when they start with one owner and maybe even one employee or two employees, once they get up to like 10 or 15, why do they run into the problems that they do?
Well, you know, this is a multifaceted issue, but I think it is important to highlight, and starting with the respect piece of it takes a lot to launch a business, get it going, kind of get it through the beginning stage. So kudos to every business that has done through that. They have gone through the growth piece, gone through kind of all of the different iterations of their business to get them to the point where they are now, which is a successful, hopefully mostly stable business. Let's just assume that they are. But I mean, the reality is, let's call it what it is. The reality is, if they've got 10 to 15 people, then they are probably doing so many things right. So the challenge at that point, and this is something that I see very often, is they stick with what got them there. So when I say what got them there, I'm talking about their systems, their processes, often the people, and they've worked together for a while. And so they kind of have this dynamic of, hey, everybody knows everything. We just switch hats between operations and HR and finance, sales, whatever it happens to be on any given day. So here's where it starts to get a little bit sticky, is as you add more people and more business, situations just get a little bit more complex. So if they don't have the systems in place and that kind of structure in place, and I'm talking about just from an HR standpoint, there's nothing to scale on. There's nothing to build on. And so things do get a little bit of haywire, to use your word, because they're trying to do things what worked for five people, but now they're trying to apply it for 15 people, and it just does not work. So that's when things start to get a little bit squirrely.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. So it's interesting that you talk about systems and process, because especially when you're talking in that, I'll say, 1-to-5 approach, what I find, and what I'll tell any company, is you always have some sort of system or process in place, but most of the time, especially on smaller organizations, it's all in somebody's head, or it's all in multiple people's head.
Correct.
So that's why where what you're saying, you know, once you cross a certain threshold, it now becomes harder to manage, because what was what I call institutional knowledge, where somebody just thought it up, somebody managed it, it worked, great, fine, but nobody ever wrote it down. Nobody ever looked to see if it needed a change. If it changed, that person just kind of changed what they were doing in their head and right. kind of built off that knowledge, but it was never, ever documented. And to me, that's where I see systems and processes fail, because they're, while we say there are always systems and processes, they're never documented systems and processes, and they're never monitored or changed. And I'll give you an example. Actually, I was talking with a client that I've re-engaged with yesterday about this. We had gone through a process mapping process about 12 to 15 years ago, because we were looking at how they took on bid work. This was a construction company, and we looked at their bid process, and their bid process took anywhere from 5 to 7 business days to complete. And I said, well, let's get a view of it, because right now you're doing what you think is right. I want to see how you're actually doing it. So I call it the caveman method. I get out post-it notes, and I say each post-it note is a specific task or decision that you're making. Now let's lay that out. We got a bare wall, and we started putting them up, and every decision, you know, you had your left, rights, and center. So depending upon what decision you're making, you go this way, that way, or the other way. And sometimes that turned into multiple decisions or choices. And when we started looking at it, we noticed something. And the something we noticed is that over time, because of certain failures, they have built in kind of this QA loop. And what ended up happening is there would be a QA check that would slow down the process for a day or two. Then there would be another QA check that would slow down the process for a day or two. And there were like 4 or 5 of these in a row. So it's very easy to quickly get up over 5 to 7 business days on preparing a bid. And, you know, you're probably familiar with this too on your end. The longer it takes for you to get that bid back, the less likely your chance of winning that bid is going to be, because somebody who's 100%. Doing it quicker and more efficiently yep. is going to get in there a lot faster.
Yep.
What we were able to do was we were able to go through that, look for all those doom loops, and show where we could remove them and where the checks still needed to be in place for QA. And we got it from a week-long process to basically a 1-to-2-day process, just like that. Because Excellent. We were able to visualize the process and actually then document, here's the steps that should be taken, and here's where we need to validate our work before we go on any further. We can't just put these constant checks in to keep it going. So there's just a quick example that I ran into. And we, like I said, we just talked about it yesterday, because guess what? Next week, we're going to be doing it all over again.
Yeah, I really like that strategy. And there's something like, I like the simplicity, and there is just something about the post-it note strategy all over the wall that just works, because you do forget about steps, especially if you're doing this day in and day out and you've been doing this job or some variation of your job. You've been running your company or working at a company for years. You just know it so well that it's so easy to forget about a step. So yeah. The post-it notes are really helpful. And I've done that myself as well of, oh, wait a second, this actually, this is, it should go here. And it's just easy if you're looking at the process and the flow and how to make things smoother. It's like this step that we're doing, step number 4 or 17, should actually be way up here. And then that would change the dynamic of the whole flow.
Yeah. And I see a lot of people that go right to a flow chart. A, most people don't know what a true flow chart is. They don't know what the symbols represent. And it tends to fall into just a straight line. They leave out all the decisions or choices they're making. So when you lay it out in that pattern with the post-it notes, when you do forget about something, you can break off the post-it notes and then you can add stuff in where they go, because we are nonlinear thinkers. As much as people like to think, right. we walk through from point A to point B and we know every step in between. As you pointed out, as you come across some of this stuff, well, we have to do this here, but we do this back there. Well, if you've already written out the path, now it's a lot of extra work to go back and fill that in, where if you're doing it on post-it notes, you just move them over, put the new ones in, and away you go again. And like you said, it's very good from the standpoint of visualization, because now they can see what they determine is a simple process to actually how complex it is to get to the decisions they're making. And that's what most people don't realize. So when they throw an employee in and say, go do this, they go do it to the best of their ability with the knowledge they have. And if it's a newer employee, they have very limited knowledge, but there's the assumption by the guy who's been there for 10 years that this is just going to automatically pop in their head and they'll figure everything out. And then they get frustrated. They take that work back, which they've already taken other work on. And now it's an even more complex situation because they've taken on more responsibility than they should have. Their new employees now going, well, I guess I don't matter that much, so I'll just hide in the corner and keep collecting a paycheck.
Yep. Well, here's the thing that we're not talking about. Nuance is never documented on a post-it note.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. It's the thing everybody but the new person knows, and they just don't think about it. So another thing, I want to kind of go back to what you were saying, because we're not using the word, but I think it's important to call out the process that you're doing with a client that you've recently re-engaged and the process that I also do with my clients. This is a protection, like an avenue to protect themselves. So sometimes they need to protect themselves from themselves, which is like the you know, they're losing bids because they've created such complexity within their own processes that they're sabotaging. They would never do it on purpose, but that's right. The reality of what's happening. And I'm seeing this from an HR standpoint as well, of all of the knowledge is in somebody's head. And let's face it, people do leave companies, and it is a very common scenario where all of this knowledge, just this incredible wealth of knowledge, walks right out with the person. What happens then? Whoever is left is recreating the wheel, trying to figure out how the person who left did the things, because they still didn't document it. Right. So this is, you know, these are the things that I help with as well, of looking at the company and saying, okay, what got you here is fantastic, but now we need to build some protection mechanisms for you. So think about like a handbook. I know it's boring, but that is one of the most underrated tools in any business, is a handbook. You go to an attorney, first thing they're going to ask for, you know, something happened, a claim or whatever, a complaint, they're going to be like, okay, show me the handbook. What does the handbook say? Mm-hmm. So it's things like this. It's like looking at the process and just slowing down long enough to say, okay, what we're currently doing, is this working, or do we need to tweak some things? And this is why it's, you know, this is often a good point where it's helpful to bring in an outsider's perspective. So I had a client say this to me just last week. No, I guess it was 2 days ago. We've got a weekly conversation.
Sure.
They were like, you know, we know this so well, but we never slow down enough to really think this through. And actually, now that you're asking the questions, I think we want to do it this other way. So we were talking about how they're structuring their employees. They're like, this is just a much smarter approach. And then the byproducts are that everything else after that, management, you know, structure, organizational structure, payroll, everything downstream is just easier from making that one tweak. So back to your point of moving that post-it note from one place in the process to another.
Yeah. And here's, as we were talking about this, this just popped into my head because this was a conversation earlier this week, actually with somebody else. We forget, you know, when we're looking at that institutional knowledge and we look at that employee that's been there 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, there are certain people that say, oh, that person's never going to quit. They love it here, blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing you got to keep in mind. When we're talking with business owners that are in their 50s, maybe early 60s, and they're starting to think about selling their business or passing it on to somebody else, and we're looking at these key employees that have been around pretty much as long as they have, what do you think's going through their head? Same thing. Well, when you leave, I'm going out the door. There's another issue. So as you plan on retiring, they're also looking at the same thing. Now, they might retire before you, they might retire after you, but the same point, if you haven't documented any of that information, there's a high probability that's going to walk out the door with you. And let's say you're going to sell the company. Anyone who's doing their proper vetting of your business is going to look at the age of your employees, how long they've been there, and what's the risk that they're going to leave should you leave. And other side of it is, what if something else happens? Because we all think we're invisible or invincible. Add a little bit more in there. We all think we're invincible. We're never going to have anything happen to us that's going to take us out of the game. Well, what if you get hit by that bus? There goes that knowledge, and there's no way to recoup that. At least if somebody retires, you could probably pick up a phone or send an email and get that information back. If they're gone or they're incapacitated, there is no way to recover that. It is lost.
Correct. Correct. I don't know if you run into this, but I hear this on occasion of, you know, we really don't even want to have a conversation about HR because we don't need more rules. Nobody wants more rules. And this isn't what it's about at all. Like, none of us want more rules. I would be very happy if there were far less rules in my own life. It's like, you know what?
Right.
Okay. I don't really need to be told, don't take a hairdryer into the bathtub, but you know, here we are. So the thing about this, and you know, we're kind of dancing around different words, but saying the same thing. So it's not about rules. And same thing for you of, hey, you're getting ready to sell your company, or you're looking at this, how are we going to prepare for this? This is really about creating clarity and consistency, not trying to add a bunch of you should, you shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, the way I define it in my world, and I've been talking a lot about this, especially as I've kind of been creating my own process with all this, everything boils down to behavior and discipline. Discipline gives you freedom. It's not the other way around. You know, there are certain rules in place that protect you. But discipline in my mind is different than rules. It's structure in how you do things and the process you follow so that you get a consistent result. And so that when you go to teach that to somebody else, they can follow along. And as you pointed out, it's also a protection for you. So you're talking about protection of the company or the employee or maybe the owner. I'm looking at protection for the overall sales and profitability of the business and its continuity beyond maybe its original members to keep that business up and running and continue to grow.
Yeah, consistency must, like, it requires deliberate effort. So you had said something about, like, you get consistent results, but I believe it's consistent behavior leads to consistent results.
Exactly.
You have to have the action part of it be consistent as well.
I appreciate somebody else bringing that up, because when I tell people it's people first, then process, or it's behavior first, then systems, they look at me and go, well, you need the systems to change the behavior. I'm like, nah, that's not how it works.
Right.
You can put in place any system you want, but if nobody follows the system, you haven't changed the behavior. They don't understand the value of the system in the first place. So if you work on the behavior first, change that, a lot of times these systems will already start implementing themselves, because the people will understand the value and see the need for it, and they will self-discipline and work towards putting in those systems.
Right. Or not. We have systems all over the place. Look at our daily lives. There's systems for investing. Hey, you know, we've all seen the tables. If you had invested $10,000 when you were 20 years old, I'm like, oh my gosh. I didn't even know which way was up when I was 20 years old. So to your point, for me, it was about my behavior,
right,
not the system. The system is solid, but yeah, nothing changed until the behavior changed.
Exactly. So
very, very good point.
And I know you got a couple other things on your list that you wanted to touch on. What's one of the other ones that we can talk about here?
Yeah, one of the things that is just, it kind of drives me crazy. And this was one where I would hear it or see it and just kind of, you know, grit my teeth and not say anything. And I'm done with that. So now I'm like, hey, it doesn't have to be. So here's what it is. You know, we have this like guru mindset in, you know, culturally, and I'm talking about broader perspective of this person is an expert. They're a guru. They're, you know, the person who knows everything about everything. And of course, that's not true. Logically, we all know that's not true. But I am seeing this kind of mindset, and there is a stereotype in HR for that reason of, I know the rules, I know the policies, I know better, so therefore I'm going to look down at you and tell you all of the things. And I don't like that at all. I think it's insulting to a business owner. So I am taking the opposite approach. Every business owner, I'm very open about this, every business owner that I talk to, whether I'm working with them or not, I'm like, look, I have never met a business owner that is not absolutely brilliant in their own way. Mm-hmm. You know your business better than I probably ever will. You know your people, you know the ins and outs, you know your client, you know your industry. Where I'm coming in is to bring a little bit of structure around the people side of things. So my approach is, how can I add value to your level of brilliance, but I am in no way attempting to tell them how to run their business. They don't need me for that. If they do, they would find a consultant specifically to meet that need. But I think it's important for us, you know, like you're helping companies prepare for sale. I think it's important for us to kind of recognize the value that we do bring and also openly talk about, okay, this is my lane. This is the lane I'm going to stay in. And in a way, it makes us a little bit less threatening, because businesses, like for you and for me, they're really opening up everything. And, you know, sometimes they're like, oh, I don't necessarily want you to see what we've been doing these past number of years. And so I come at it from much more of a partner perspective versus that expert perspective. If I could shake that yoke from our entire HR industry, I would do it, because I think it's just causing more harm than good.
Well, I don't think it's just your industry. I think it's anyone that's kind of in the professional services industry across the board, because I mean, what are we taught to market ourselves? We're taught to build authority. Well, how do you build authority? You show yourself as being the expert in whatever discipline you are in. So it's kind of this catch-22, because we have to show that we know what we're talking about. But at the same point, we have to be open to listening to what is going on in our clients' world. And I think that's where a lot of consultants, coaches tend to fall off the bandwagon, because they've either built their own process and then they are rigid to that process and it can't change. You have to follow every step along the way, or they bought into a franchise that is the same way. It's a process. What they've done is they simplified it for themselves, because they created a process that, or they bought into a process that all they had to do was basically act like facilitator and check the boxes and walk their way through it. The issue I've always found with that is, like you said, the consultant or coach or whatever tries to elevate their level of experience beyond what they're doing, and they're not listening to the client's needs. So for example, this last week, actually yesterday, I just delivered a report to a client that brought me in. They are a multi-location business. They are in their own right successful. They built a good brand. They're well recognized in their market, and they're still, you know, having some money cash flow situations coming up. Yeah. And it's not that they're not producing enough cash flow. It's, again, it's just understanding how they're utilizing that money internally. And I never came into it saying, this is what you have to do. I asked a lot of questions. I observed over a number of weeks. I talked with the owners. I talked with some employees. I listened to what they had going on. And then from there, through my observations, I made recommendations. And even on all the recommendations I made, I said, this is not you do not follow this step by step. This is a guideline that you can go through and you have to see how it works for you. There are certain things that I will be more hardline on, saying, well, you're spending way too much money here, which is why you're having the issues you're having. Here's how you change that. There's other things where it's like, okay, you give me so much information. There's so much I can find out on my own. Based on that, here's my perception of maybe what you need to look at and how you need to look at that and make those changes happen. And like you, because I believe you're much like I am on that, it's really about listening to the client and then applying what you know and teaching them, here's what you need to look for. Challenge this, validate this, test this. Don't take my word as law, but take what I'm saying as an expert in however many years or decades, that if you follow this path, you're going to come to a better answer than you are at if you just go on your own.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I found myself as I'm listening to you, thinking about two things. One, you know, your approach and my approach were, you know, I don't think we've ever talked about this before, but it's very similar. Like, leading with curiosity is a skill in itself because it takes effort and attention and active listening versus coming in and saying, I know exactly what to do. No, you don't. And, you know, and also I think kind of the closing point for this podcast is, we were talking about experts and kind of selling yourself. I think we're all sick of being told that somebody is an expert. Like, confidence whispers. It has no need to shout. So yep. Leading with curiosity, giving recommendations that are actually applicable to the business, there's your expertise right there. You don't necessarily have to broadcast it quite so much.
Yeah, that is the challenge we're all running into, because, you know, I know you're building your systems for what you're doing. Yep. I have written a book. I built a system around that. And my goal is to hopefully get other coaches and consultants to use that. My challenge is, you can't just follow the system. You have to have enough knowledge to take that system and modify it to the benefit of your client.
Exactly.
And so many of these other, and I'm not going to call them out specifically, but there's other systems or processes that are either licensed or franchised that is like, nope, here's the 10 steps. You follow the 10 steps all the way through. If they're already on step 8, you got to bring them back to step 1 and walk through that process. And that, to me, just really is not effective, nor is it what organizations and leaders are looking for. They need something that is moldable to their needs and what they have to do, versus saying you have to follow the expert and follow them all the way through the process. And that's where somebody has to be smart enough to adjust to the needs of the client. And that's where I think, you know, you come in, and it's that whole listening approach. It's listening to what the needs are, and then it's modifying your approach to match theirs. Even though you might follow a similar process all the way through, mm-hmm. It's knowing when to adjust. It's knowing when to slow down and step back. It's knowing when to ask more questions. It's knowing when to give advice or insight, because, you know, if they take that wrong step, it's going to be a costly one, and you kind of want to put them on pause with it. Yep. But it's also knowing when to let them kind of try things and make mistakes, but protect them from making anything too big or too expensive. And that, to me, is a difference between what I would consider a good coaching consultant versus a lot of what you see in the marketplace today.
Absolutely. Yeah. And these things, all of these things that you were talking about, lead to trust. If somebody doesn't trust the system or the process or the person, then they're just not going to stick with it. Who would? We want something, and you know, we have an issue. We want it resolved, but we do need to have some trust that we are getting sound guidance in whatever form that comes in, that this person has our best interests in mind, and then we can take it forward. Like, that mindset, you know, and we are emotional beings, it makes a huge difference of whether someone's going to engage or not.
Yeah, and I would add to that trust part, you also have to be able to trust the process. And yes. This is that fine line between, you know, having a rigid system and allowing some flexibility in that, because what I often find is, you know, change is a roller coaster. And when you want to lose weight at the beginning of the year, whatever you want going on, there's always that 3-week window, you know, where everyone's going to the gym and the gym is packed. And then you go about mid to late January and all of a sudden the place is empty.
Yep.
This is what I find with business owners, even when they invest a lot of money in having somebody come in and help them figure things out, is it gets to that tough point where things don't seem like they're working right. And you got to get through that dip before you can bounce back out and actually see the fruits of your labor on it. Most people want to quit at that low spot because, like you said, we're all emotional beings. We get frustrated with where we're at. We don't see the benefits of what we're doing. And we just think, well, I'll just go back the old way because the devil I know is better than the devil I don't. And you have to keep pushing through that process in order to be successful.
I could not have said that better.
Great. Well, we are on the same page. It's too bad Rich missed out on all this. He will be joining us next week, and you will as well, because we're going to dig into one of our favorite subjects again. We're going to talk about AI a little bit more, because the AI seems to be on top of everyone's mind, and there's the good, the bad, the ugly. I think we're going to touch base on a little bit of all the above next week. But, you know, Kelly, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, if they have some HR questions or going through some challenges where maybe you could help, how's the best way to do it?
The best place to start is my website, leaninhr.com. I've got numerous resources on there. My contact information is on there as well. Leaninhr.com.
Great. And I would say, you know, for Rich and I, go to xcxo.com, or actually .net. I keep doing the .com thing. It's actually .net. So xcxo.net. You can contact me at dan@xcxo.net. And that's the best way to get a hold of us. Kelly, thanks for joining me today. Thanks for being my partner in crime for this one. And we will welcome Rich and you back next week. Sound good?
Sounds great. I'm so excited for that conversation. So thanks again for having me, Dan.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and the Biz. If today's conversation sparked new ideas for your company, the team at XCXO can help you turn those ideas into action. XCXO brings together seasoned executives, fractional CEOs, COOs, CFOs, and CXOs, who step into your business with the experience, strategy, and leadership to drive real results. Whether you're trying to scale, strengthen operations, improve profitability, or prepare for transition, our experts help you move faster and lead with confidence. To learn more or start a conversation, visit xcxo.net. That's xcxo.net, your shortcut to stronger leadership and a better-run business. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time on Books and the Biz.